Methodist Lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to give it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. There are 28 lodges located in various parts of the world. All of these lodges are dedicated to promulgating the philosophy of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. This local branch of ULT participates in this worldwide movement by sponsoring various activities. On Sunday mornings at this hour, 11 to 12 noon, there is a talk, forum, or panel presented. And all of these Sunday morning meetings are based on a general monthly theme. And the theme for this month is basic theosophical principles. Now, next Sunday morning, there will be a panel on the subject, Is Universal Brotherhood a Fact in Nature? Now, following all these Sunday morning meetings, there's always a time for questions and discussion. On Wednesday evenings from 7:45 to 9 o'clock, there is a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. So the class will begin this coming Wednesday, the third chapter of the Ocean, which relates to the Earth Chain. Now, there is a special meeting held on Friday, the third Friday of each month. And this meeting relates to ancient literature and light of theosophy. The subject that will be discussed on Friday, November 19th, is Islam, the Alchemy and Happiness. On Saturday, November 13th, there will be a symposium held in New York City. This will be sponsored by the New York Lodge in cooperation with Philadelphia and Washington Lodges. The theme of that symposium, we're told, is the path of discipleship. It will begin at 11 a.m. and last until 4:30 p.m. If there are those who are interested in going and would like to discuss transportation, we suggest you contact the student at the book table. Now, this lodge maintains a reference library, which is open each Wednesdays from 5:30 to 7:30. It carries a straight line of theosophical literature consisting of books, pamphlets, and magazines comprising the original writings of the founders of the theosophical movement. Also, you will find other related texts in the library that may be of interest. There's a student always available to answer questions and assist you in finding references. Also, there will also be a reference in the library or on the table just behind the usher, which will relate to the evening's class. Now, all of these, all of the literature that we have mentioned is on display on the book table just outside of this room, and it may be purchased either during the library hours or before or after our regular meetings. All activities of this lodge are free. The lodge continues to be sustained by voluntary contributions of time, of service, and money, and all are most welcome to participate. The reading for today has been selected from the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, Krishna is speaking. Thou grievest for those that may not be lamented, whilst thou sentiments of those of the expounders of the letter of the law. Those who are wise in spiritual things grieve neither for the dead nor for the living. I myself never was not, nor thou, nor all the princes of the earth, nor shall we ever hereafter cease to be. As the Lord of this mortal frame experiences therein infancy, youth, and old age, so in future incarnations will it be the same. One who is confirmed in this belief is not disturbed by anything that may come to pass. The senses moving toward their appropriate objects are producers of heat and cold, pleasure and pain, which come and go, and are brief and changeable. These do thou endure, O son of Bharata. For the wise man, whom these disturb not, and to whom pain and pleasure are the same, is fitted for immortality. The subject of the talk for this morning is who, what, and where is God?
Maybe from that reading, we will sort of get a hint of what we're going to be discussing and how we're going to be discussing the subject matter for today. We are going to give a theosophical point of view of the title of Who, Where, and What is God. Just a slight little hint, we will give us a reading of about theosophy for any of those who might be new, but we will go into detail on this subject. We want to read to you a small summarization of what this is about and what theosophy is about. Theosophy is divine wisdom, or wisdom about the divine in man and nature. It teaches that deity is that unknowable, infinite, changeless, divine essence in the root of all manifestation. Periodically, universes come and go, but manifestation, as it seems, the deity is eternal. During a period of universal manifestation, the universe divine plan inherent in deity awakens to activity and is expressed through the highest degree of substance first. Divine intelligence is expressed through all forms in nature in a degree suitable to that of form. Likewise, every human being has the potentiality of becoming godlike in power and wisdom because his inner divine essence is one with deity, its source. If we can prove man's spirit, we have proven God's spirit. Just as the drop of water proves the ocean from which it came. So then we sort of look at all of this and we understand that all down through the ages, all great spiritual teachers of humanity agreed on the point. that one must look within to discover the answer. So it is not so much of outside learning, it's that looking within. And for some, it might be a little confusing and a little scary upon trying to search within ourselves, because we just don't seem to see anything there. We don't know what we're looking for. But the philosophy gives us hints as what we can use to help us understand. And we have to understand we're talking about ancient teachings that go back into the far night of time. And it's more Eastern than it is Western. It is more universal in scope. So we can look at different aspects, but the most important thing and hint that we can to get to understand is we have to look which is the temporary of my nature, of my being, and which is the permanent. Now, we might say, what do we mean by what is the temporary and what is the permanent? We'll start with the reverse, the permanent, that one knowing that I am I, and we can all say that, I am I. It's that same I that was a little kid, that grew up through teenager, midlife, old age. That I is always there. That I is always there whether we're in a waking state or we're in a sleeping state or dreaming state. The identity is there. We, upon awakening in the morning, we don't have to sit down and figure out who and what. We know we are I. So that individuality part of our nature, let's look at that. And as was stated in that opening, we are all part of that deific principle. So if we take that into consideration, it's not just us, it's all of nature. It's all of humanity, it's of all the kingdoms. That deific source is in everything. It's in certain degrees, in certain things. And when we get to the point where man enters upon the whole scene of evolution, the thinker, and coming into form, we see there is a different degree, one from, let's say, of a human thinking being versus, let's say, a beetle. So once we consider on that, we can look for an understanding. Now, theosophy gives us their impression. We can say we use the idea of deific principle. So God here in the West can be put as theosophically, impersonal, that which is eternal, that which is boundless, omnipresent, an unchanging principle. It is absolute in the causeless cause and rootless in the root of the journey. So that deific principle, we can sort of, if we can, visualize a triangle. We have a deific principle that just is. And two aspects from that principle are the process and the whole purpose. So we have a source, that deific principle, and we have the process. And the process is cycles. Now we're all aware of cycles. Not just the cycles of the seasons, the days, the nights, the cycles of spring, summer, fall, winter. Cycles within the universe, cycles within ourselves. Cycles do exist. Things work on cycles. It's a reoccurring of what has been. Maybe in new clothing, new apparatus, but it's a recycling. And that's the process. That's how it works. And that process, we could say, is the motivator. Now we say, what about the purpose? Well, the purpose would be of growth. If we look at life as a school, we're here to learn. We're here to balance. We're here to understand a harmonic life. And it is through our desires and our results that we get, and the whole aim of the purpose of it. And it's that recycling, that act of coming forth from the source, that helps us to move on in this evolution. So theosophically, we have, that's the basis, the top part, that deific principle, its process, and its evolution and purpose. Due to the fact that we as thinkers, when we came upon the scene of evolution, entered into forms, physical forms that we now see, that we can look in the mirror and we see what we see, but we really don't see the real, the inner real. We only see that of the physical. And in terms of development, this whole idea of man being an immortal thinker, here in evolution for the experience, the emancipation of the soul, shall we say, for the purpose of raising the entire mass of manifested matter up to the status and nature and dignity of conscious godhood. So that means all the degrees in the lower kingdoms, all the intelligence that we see. And one might say, what intelligence are we speaking about? Well, let's just take a rock, for instance. What's holding it together? A grain of sand, that cohesiveness. In that degree, that's the intelligence that we can see. And then if we go to the plant kingdom, we see sensitivity. We see a plant that will yield towards the sunlight, that will pick up from a drought once it starts to rain and then stand tall again. It knows to be affected by the surroundings. It knows to look for the light. It knows to feel for the moisture in the water. And in the animal kingdom, we see sensitivity. And in that, with its great instinct, we see intelligence there. So we're all, in a way, degrees of intelligence. And when we get to man, in that part of our evolution, we could say we are the kingpin. We are the highest of all the kingdoms. Because with that comes responsibility. And that responsibility is we have the power of choice. All those lower kingdoms work under natural impulse. But for man, it has that power of choice, can be a devil or a god, depending on how we make our choices. And for most of us, in this point of evolution, whether we're trying to journey on a path or not, we are more affected by our surroundings, of things outside of ourselves. We look outside of ourselves to get guidance. Very few here in the West have that true feeling of look within, thou art Buddha. That true feeling that the ancient teachings have always kept at the height of that quietness, that needing to look within, because we have powers within. And it's that right attitude of mind. If we could learn to seek to realize the meaning of every event and thing that we approach, we could maybe understand not only ourselves, but everyone around us, because we're all from that same source. We all have the basic powers within us. It's our expressions that could be different from the outside. And when we think of words like justice and mercy and equality, these are words that we could say are God-like qualities that should be part of our nature, that within our true nature is. But as stated, we have to shed away the veils to get to the real inner. And that gadget that we sort of look at as a gauge is really not something that's permanent. For most, it's we keep concern about what happened, what's happening now, where am I going to go with it. We keep moving around. We don't understand that if we could try to live each moment as it is, in the now, do the best that we can do right here and now, rather than keep picking up and bringing back and picking, shall we say, at the wound of the past. Because mostly we seem to learn through pain and suffering. It's the pain and suffering that maybe causes most to start to question, to start to want to know. And then through that questioning, we can sort of understand. But there's lots of sayings that are out there, like don't cry over spilt milk, which is true. Why worry and keep bringing up things that we went through in the past that were painful? Because all we're doing is drawing attachments to the now. And it's the same thing when we put too much faith in how and what we expect something to be for the final outside, and when it comes true and it isn't the way we like it, for some, we're quite crushed. And to understand maybe that if you start out with the right attitude and give it the best you can, then let go of it. It will evolve on its own. It's like that whole idea of the cause and effect of the law of karma. We set up causes, they will reap their effects. How we're affected by the effects, that's what we need to look at. Do we look at it as a learning situation? Like, I understand that. I know I want to develop more on that line. Or do we look at it with that approach of, it's too late, I can't do anything about it? If it's the whole world and the whole universe is evolving, we are part of that. We're going through it. And for each his own way of lessons is what brings it back to how we approach it. So this whole idea is difficult for some. As soon as one says you don't look outside for that permission, you don't pray outside for something. Anything that we put our minds to and really believe in, we can achieve. We are a powerhouse that we don't even know about. Now, even science is coming across, between science and nature, is coming across in today's world with this idea that they do believe there is some sort of universal mind directing the forces of nature and the movements of matter. And there are certain degrees of science that are working in that direction. It'll be more so, it seems, that science will come forth with more things to have us understand the whole world as it is than what we would get from a quote, an organized religious following. Because again, there is that which is permanent and that there is that which is not everlasting. And we see a lot of changes in science, just in the age of this earth of ours. Keeps going back and going back. And it says the term God, unless referred to the unknown deity or absoluteness, which can hardly be supposed, shall we say, of acting in any way. And it says, has always been in the ancient philosophies the collectivity of the workings and the intelligent forces in nature. So we get that from the ancient teachings also. And nature, it's a process of formation. And if we look around, we can see within ideas of triangles, of circles, of cubes, of dots and lines, we can observe different things to see the intelligence that make up basic symbols. And we were thinking of the snowflake, for instance, which along with the crystals exhibit the geometric forms existing in nature. We can see it if we look, take one when get it on our glove or our mitten in the winter, and we look at it and we're fascinated by the detail and the exact way it's each one is set up, and they're not identical. So we know we see this process of great intelligence there. So now we're going to come to this idea of looking within with more detail. If we can understand that spirit in the body is the perceiver, that which perceives, which takes it in, which in a way knows, more so than our personal nature probably. Sometimes it remains unchanged, but perceives all the changes. The power to do, to know, to feel, all comes from it, which are the powers of divinity, and they're all within us. In the little devotional book of The Voice of the Silence, it says, look within, as we stated earlier, thou art Buddha. It shows that we are gods in the making, for spiritual development is not possible without close communion with the God within. That voice of consciousness, that we sit in that quiet meditative mode and take all the outside things away, and we just have a discussion with ourselves about ourselves. In this idea of being thinkers, we have a tendency to have thoughts that are of a higher nature and thoughts that are of more personal, lower nature, more of the self rather than a universal thought. And the more we paid heed to it, that voice within us, that voice of consciousness, and that looking for that communion with it, the more it will speak to us. And most of the times, when we hear this voice, we are so busy running that we don't give it the time to understand. It's almost comes through as, that's not it, that's not the way, there is a better way. It's not something that usually it's like, you could have done better. It's situations we've all been in when we have a discussion with someone and we think after the fact how we could have said it better, that what we wanted to say. But it's, again, that afterthought, we can have the power, we have that power within us. We can make that power work so that we know ahead of time. rather than looking back. And part of that is in the East, and part of the Theosophical philosophy is try to keep a journal at night. Try to clear your mind of your daily routine if possible. Find either a piece of music, something that is uplifting that you could read before you go to sleep, some sort of a devotional book that you feel a closeness with. Sort of setting the mode for your next phase of consciousness as your consciousness leaves the body and goes into other states other than the waking state. And then it says also, for those who, beside that type of a journal, they can also keep a dream journal, keep a record of your dreams and what comes through it. And then it's like a reviewing that you can do either daily or weekly, go through and see situations. That voice definitely is there. We crowd it out with all the exterior noise, so we need to learn that quietness. So that's one mode of doing it, which sort of puts you in a certain state. And then upon awakening in the morning, we can also put into effect ways of thinking and attitude of mind of how we're going to go through the day. We can work our way out of a real downer feeling by thinking about something we can do for someone else who might need some help. Because all of a sudden, you've taken all the interest off of, quote, ourselves, and we put it out to another situation. So it takes it off of us. And that whole idea that the potentiality, all the great teachers that have come down through the ages, all the great sages, have worked many lifetimes in one direction so that in the lifetime that we might know them of a historical value, they are in full bloom of having in complete control all their physical and lower aptitudes that they work through. Us as the thinker, we are in control versus the physical, the emotional, the nature that is not steady, that's up and down, or it's up too high, or it's down too low. We're learning that balance, and it's through balance that we can really see what we're doing. For most of us, we're so caught up in the thing that we forget we are the ones working through it. It's just the thing is the thing that we're concerned about. So to be able to take that bit of nature and use it on a daily basis, we can work in a way that eventually we will get that feeling of, I know. Not I have just heard, but I know because I have experienced it enough times that I have learned to understand what it is. And things like this, to show you the proof of it, if we look anywhere down the ladder, even to a young child, to some, they look up to individuals in awe because they sense there is security, there is balance there, there's something they can hold onto. Well, we can look in our ways and see all the great teachers that have come and been and are still existing today. There are those that are in physical forms. There is forces that are without physical forms, but the intelligence is there. All we have to do try to tap it. And the other thing is, not just once or twice, it's a type of thing, if you really want it, you're going to have to work on it on a 24/7 basis. We can slip, we can slide, we can fall back. Doesn't matter. As long as we have the initiative to get up and keep trying, eventually we will be able to express the same type of qualities to those who have expressed it for us, because there is universal brotherhood. It is a fact in nature. We have to redevelop and reopen ourselves to understand the knowledge that we do have from lives we have learned and expressions we have been through, so that we can express in some lifetime full godlike qualities of the great teachers. So you might have some comments or questions. Yes.
Yeah, I guess this is both a comment and a question. As we already know in theosophy, that dogmatic religion or material science can really get in the way of human progress. And keeping this real brief, you know, materialistic science says that, you know, there was a Big Bang theory. And yes, the universe right now is expanding, but as we talk about in theosophy, it expands, contracts, expands, contracts. It's called the universal breath. And it could never be a Big Bang, because as we say in theosophy, there was never a beginning and there's no end. And the other thing is, materialistic science is always looking for water in order for there to be life elsewhere. But in theosophy, we've brought this up before, that everything's for real, everything's alive. And there's intelligence everywhere and in everything. And then the last thing is, also we brought this up, keeping it very simple and basic. The more we can reach inward, the more we can reach outward towards the world out there too. So these are valuable things that we've learned in theosophy.
Yes, and we will notice that in the scientific world, there are other theories out there beside the Big Bang theory. There's a lot more developing, you know, depending on what field it is. And as we stated, it will come probably from science. We'll be able to bring out new facts and new things that will probably have people in awe and open us up to the idea of something that is just constantly, constantly developing. Yes, in the back.
If what Theosophy puts out is true, that we are that spiritual essence within, how have we gotten to the point where we have dogmatic religion and we have science ruling our lives? What happened? How did we forget it? And then how do we bring ourselves back to it?
That's a big challenge. Well, in the teachings, it does explain that in the very beginning, on this planet, there was a time when we speak of the Golden Age, the Bronze Age. We are now in what they call the Dark Age, the Iron Age, the Kali Yuga. But the one thing about this age is, this whole great time period, is that things move faster than they did in other great periods of development. So if anyone really wanted to, they could probably make more progress in this age, even as hectic and electrical as it is. At the very beginning part of the development on this earth, there were those who had had development in prior periods of evolution. They were the ones that came forth first. Then, through all the development, through all the lower kingdoms, through the development of forms and matter, by the time the thinker entered the scene into it, there was a purity, a spirituality, a light burning within, that it was almost like an innocence of a knowledge of knowing things. And as man progressed through times and periods of evolution, we started to get connected with the matter more than what we really are, and we got imbued with it and in love with it. And we no longer held on or had that light as bright. It started dimming and dimming and dimming. And the more we piled on from the outside of the way we were thinking and acting, the dimmer it got. But the fact is, when we start teaching about the sevenfold nature of man and the knowing that in that triangle that we explained that holds the source, the process, and the purpose, that triangle is also within us. There is that deific essence that's there. There's the thinker, and then there's a part of our nature that's like the storehouse, that booty. We call it Atma Buddhi Manas. There is a part of our nature that is the storehouse and the holder of all experiences we have learned within us. There are those who can tap into that. There are those that have taken many lifetimes to understand that. So between this triangle, we then have this, we could say the quaternary, this lower part, that life principle that thrills through all, that astral body that we speak of, that is really the form that the physical body is made up of, that our senses of hearing, taste, seeing, all those are within that true astral body. And it is the physical form, the material, the coats of skin that some have spoke of, that have been layered over. These are all part of our nature and that Kama principle. And that is why we, when we do incarnate into physical forms, we have that feeling of a duality, because there's your personality and there's your individuality. And that, because of that duality, at one time in earlier periods, and will again on that process of recircling come back to that sort of one-pointedness, not the duality. It will come back to that one, that source. But in the meantime, on this physical form, in this physical form, on our level of evolution and development, we have that duality, and we have literally forgotten who and what we really are. And it's going to take work to get back to it. And it might not, for some it might be, you know, in one lifetime. For others it might take many lifetimes. First, the desire has to be within us to want it, to know it, to feel it, to be it. Yes.
It's just what we were thinking, so that Kama or desire principle, it's we who are making the choice to remember who and what we are or not. Would that be correct?
Yes. Because for most, it's like, it's always that question. And for some, it's not even the question, but it is there, that dearer for the better. Let's go do this. This is more fun. But we have to understand there's always that, you know, two sides to the coin. It's the same one, but it has two sides. So we sort of like live for outside attention and outside love and outside compassion, and we look for outside justice. We need to look inside, and it's tells us it doesn't happen overnight. Anything in the universe, including all of the lower kingdoms and all of nature, nothing happens overnight. It's a development, it's a process, it's slowly gained. But once it's gained and once it's held on to, it can be expressed. Yes.
Who is it that asked those questions in the first place? Science of when, who, what, where is God? Who asked that question?
Well, it depends on what type of a background. If you're coming from a religious background, a scientific or materialistic background, if you're coming from an Eastern background, it all depends on the approaches. But it's like that real nature within us knows, and it needs to work through this, quote, form, this personality that we have built up by choices we have made in the past. It has to work through this vehicle. So it will come to a point where, just like in the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, the battle will come. The plane's already here. There will be the battle between the higher and the lower, the personal nature, because the personal nature is very happy right now. It likes all these ups and downs and all this excitement and all this sadness. It loves all this. It doesn't want to give up. So for us to not necessarily kill it out, but to get all those lower natures within us in tune and in line to a certain way of living and thinking, that higher nature will get through. And once it gets through, then we now have a oneness working. That's what you have when you have a Krishna, a Buddha, a Christ child. They're working as one. There is not that duality conflict of choice. It knows the proper and correct and balanced way of making a choice. Yes.
So is that what one would call a fully realized being, one who has realized that potential, found that, heard the voice of the silence and the fullness of the seeming void and the voidness of the seeming full. Mm. So it all kind of melts away, and we've all heard stories about the Buddha and his meditating under the Bodhi tree, and all of a sudden he's enlightened. But didn't it take like millions and millions of years, really? He was the efflorescence of an age.
Mm.
He came forth and shone his light on all by becoming a fully realized being. And we have that potential as well. Although if we don't believe we don't, if we don't believe we have it, then we're putting ourselves back. First, we have to believe we have that potential.
Well, as we said, it's an attitude of mind. There has to be more to life. When we look around, we see injustice because we do not have the knowledge of what brought this situation to where it is. Within us, we can tap and understand, but the fact that we see injustice, we see a lot of hatred, we see separateness. Separateness, I guess we could say, is the biggest key, because just sitting here in this room and looking around at everyone, we could see separateness. This one's wearing a certain color, this one's not wearing a certain color. You know, it's the same type of thing. It's that feeling of separateness rather than that feeling of oneness. And as it states, it doesn't just melt away. Once that battle begins and once we start understanding things that happen around us, things that happen throughout the world, we look at it in a different way of looking, because we have no idea what brought it to its point and why these people are involved this way and why these people seem to be suffering. We don't really know what was the causes that brought these results. And we're never going to know unless we too start looking to say, is there a better way? Is there a quieter way to reach out of myself, to really come out and really know? And one other little light part is we must have a sense of humor, because God knows during the day, quote, we do a lot of dumb things. That's all right. That's all part of a learning process. Once we start to learn a correct way of doing it, we won't keep stubbing our toe in that same spot, that same area. We'll start to learn we don't need this and this, we need this. Way in the back.
Yeah, can we say that in regards to this idea of separateness, that if we realize that since, as was stated in the talk, that we are all part of that one deific essence, that if we can truly take that in and we realize that whether somebody is homeless or a mega billionaire, that it doesn't really matter. That doesn't make somebody better or less than, depending on their material goods. But it's just that we're all the same. We're all one. We're all on a journey, but we're all at different levels.
Right.
So we would think then that we think that that's maybe the start of an understanding of that we're not separate, that we're all together, and that we need to understand that we're all part of the one.
And do you know, a mother to her child feels it. We can feel it within the family, a tightly knit family, our own family. We need to learn to open that gate and let it go to our neighbors, to our neighborhood, to our area where we live. When we think about it, there is no reason for certain situations and feelings to come within our heads if we had that openness. You know, people say, well, it's fearful to walk down the street after a certain bit of time. With a little common sense and a few friends, you could walk anywhere at any time if that was the case. So it takes also common sense, but there really, when you start thinking about it, it'll drop away all sorts of fears that we have either been taught or read or picked up like a sponge and think it's our feelings. The common fears that people have today are, in a way, a waste of time. Better send out good, strong energy of help. Just a thought. A thought is a thing. If enough people think in a certain way, there's those statements that come from the ancients about one could move mountains. Well, maybe they had the knowledge of how to break that gravity, that cohesiveness of it. Maybe they had the knowledge and they could express it. We have a lot of knowledge within us. We could express it, but we have to work our way back, start tearing away all the little outer flecks so we can get back to the real inner.
Well, you just said something a few moments ago about how during the day we're in our relationships and so forth, you said God knows. Oh, in other words, then we should take your head, go in a quiet place, sit down, nature, garden somewhere, and say to ourselves, God knows. Do you think by being quiet and thinking and feeling around, you know, ourselves in the middle of nature and so forth, that we may get an answer? And if, because you said he knows.
And the ancient teachings have told us, yes, we will get an answer. And that's how great sages and great godlike qualities come to certain people that can help other people. If we look at the idea of we're all one, doesn't it make sense if we're trying to help others that we're really also helping ourselves in development? That we use that expression, God knows, all the time. And do we really think about what we're saying? Not really. It's just an expression that we say. But there is a part of us that really knows, even as a young child, we knew if something wasn't, that's not fair. Why should this be okay here but not okay there? Why should there be these differences? Children, young children, before they're affected, they know that feeling of what's just and what isn't just. And as we get out into the world and get ourselves covered with all the glamour that comes with the outside world and all the hecticness, we forget. And we go through life with, that's okay for him, but it's not okay for me. We actually push forward that separateness rather than bringing within that brotherliness. Yes.
We have to be careful, though, in theosophy when we say God knows or he in reference to God, because semantically, and semantics is there's signs and symbols, that God is our Father in heaven. And what is our Father in heaven but our higher self? We are, it is a part of our very nature. So it's not any separate being. It's not a male or a female.
True.
It is accessible, but it is the deific principle, and it's a principle. It's not a being. It's being-ness. So we can say, God knows, or God help me, or my Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. That is, it's sacred, but it's not separate. There's no separation.
This is definitely that deific principle when we're speaking of it. We're talking about that the real nature within us, the real nature that we really are, and not this personal mask, persona that we have in any one lifetime.
A moment ago you mentioned moving mountains, and we think it's so important. We've proved to ourselves in our own lifetimes when we've given up a habit or changed a way that we had of something. We might have tried it 5 times, but the difference in the 6th time where we were able to do it was we believed we were ready and we put it into action.
Mm-hmm.
So it would seem that first we need to be confirmed in the fact that we are able, that we are deific in our essence, have faith that this will happen in the sense of, I'm going to give it all I've got and watch the results, and we would be astounded
mm-hmm.
if we actually acted as if and noted the results. So we can be our own scientists, but we've proved it for ourselves. We have moved mountains when we fully and firmly believed we could and acted as if.
And it's like, we have to really want to do that. That expression, be all you can be. And for most of us, we haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg. But the beauty of it is, if we can challenge ourselves to keep trying, if there have been those who have gone before us and have left signposts, and for each one, the path may be different, but the goal eventually is one. But the wanting to do it, I guess, is the most important thing that they tell us to start with. And not worry about it, but at least start changing the way we live and think and have attitudes about people and places so that we can be more open, more universal, and understand that if something's to be, it's going to be only because of that great law. And it's a universe of law we live in. We can look up into the skies at night and we know where to look at a certain time of year for a certain constellation. The fact that we can sort of know for the trust of that should give us some sort of hint that there is intelligence all around us, and we're just a certain speck of that intelligence. So hopefully you will continue to check into some of these, because once you start on Wednesday night classes, we're soon to get past the universe, and we're getting down to man, and see just how complex we really are. This way, we would really get to know that quality and get to the point where we can express it 24/7. So hopefully we'll see you next Sunday.